Now we're holding at the top of Nun Aleph Amud Aleph. So having learned yesterday all about Netzel from a mess, which we said was one of the 12 Tumas of a mess that a Nazir would have to shave for, now let's talk about the next one, which is Rokov, which is where the body decays and becomes dust. So we started talking about it yesterday, about the amount of it. Now we're going to talk more details about it. Tanan Rabbanan, a Zehu mess sheyesh le Rokov. What kind of mess has the din of Rokov? Now the difference is, in other words, Netzel, being that it's where as we talked about yesterday, the flesh liquefies and then forms a kind of gel, then you don't have any exceptions. I mean, whenever that happens, under whatever conditions that's going to happen, then it's going to be metame. As opposed to Rokov, when you think about it, is dust that from the decayed body. You have all kinds of other dust as well. You have all kinds of other things that decay and form dust as well. So the halacha, the Moshe Mitzrayim, that says that Rokov is metame, also says that Rokov can't have had anything mixed into it in the first place. So therefore, the kind where you would have Rokov is mes shenikba orim. The mess would have to be buried without clothing, because otherwise the clothing eventually decays and forms dust as well. But orin shel shayish, in a coffin made out of marble, or on a stone floor. So those kinds of things then don't decay, so you don't have any other dust mixed in with the dust from the body. Zeu mess sheyesh le'rokov, that would be the kind of mess where there is rokov. On the other hand, nikba b'ksusai, on the other hand, if he was buried in his clothing, and eventually the clothing decays, but orin shel eitz, or he was buried in a wooden coffin where eventually the wood decays, or if it's on a floor of bricks, where bricks also eventually break, they Tosfos points out, they more easily get rubbed out, and therefore you have dust from them, gets mixed in with the dust from the mess. Zehu mess she'in lo rokov, that would be the kind of mess where there's no rokov. And Tosfos adds, now you're not even going to say, you might argue, okay, so obviously, you know, fine, we talked about yesterday, one handful, we said a maloy tarvah, a spoonful, which we said was the size, we had various possibilities as far as how much of the hand it goes into. So you're going to say that, one tarvot of that wouldn't be metame, obviously, because not all of it is from the mess. But if you were to take several handfuls, then wouldn't it, for sure, it would include a handful from the mess? No, the din of Rokov is specifically when to begin with, when the body was buried in such a way that the dust of it doesn't get mixed in with the dust of anything else. You have a Gemara in Nida that discusses the question, what happens if afterwards some of that dust gets mixed with other dust? Is it still matame? Then you have a machlokas about that. But it does have to be that to begin with, when it formed, it was exclusively from the mess and not from anything else. So the Gemara continues, Oma Ola, in Rokov Ela Bamina Boso Umina Gidum Uminhat Somas. So Ola says the din of Rokov would apply only to dust that comes from the flesh, from the gidim, and from the bones. In other words, it has to be from all three of them. Gidim is a bit of a generic term that the Gemara uses for various kinds of long, thin structures in the body. It can include nerves, it can include tendons, it can include different things like that. Anyway, Ula says that the Rokov, in order to be metame, would have to be from all of those things together. So Rava says, and in that case, I have a contradiction. A Braisa says Rokov abomina boso toher. That Braisa says that if Rokov that comes from the flesh is tahor, it doesn't have the dinim of Rokov. And Rava says, ha, now the implication seems to be mina etzim tame. If it came from the bones, it would be tame. What do you mean? Va'afagav deleka baser. Even now, if it comes from the bones, means even if there's no flesh with them, then it's still matame. According to you, Ola, it has to be from all of them together. Um, so uh, The answer is no. Emahochi, no. The implication you have to take from the braisa is rather as follows. Rok v'abomin abosar toher ad sheyesh etzim b'bosar. What it means is if it comes only from the flesh, then it's toher unless there's also a bone in that flesh. So we don't mean the diuk shouldn't be that flesh no, bone yes, but rather flesh no, flesh and bone yes. So then the Gemara says, so what do you mean? Like a gidim. But what do you mean then? If you only have flesh and bones, you still lack a gidim. So why is that missing? And the answer is okay. Ef shalabosso lot somas bla gidim. If you have flesh and you have bones, inevitably you're going to have gidim together with them also. Whether you understand gidim as nerves or tendons or different things like that, they're going to when you have bosso and etzem, you're going to have the structures that join them together. So therefore the braisa didn't need to mention them. It can mention bosso no. Etzem, yeah, and the implication is bosso and etzem, yeah, and once you have bosso and etzem, necessarily you have gidim as well. So in that case, so why did Ula bother mentioning gidim at all, says Tosfos? Because we talked about yesterday, or 2 days ago, we talked about nefel shalem iskashu evod of the gidim. You have a stillborn baby at a very early stage of its development where the gidim have not developed yet, or at least they're not clearly visible. So Ula wants us to know that in that case, then Rokov wouldn't apply if such a baby passed away, if such a baby was born stillborn and eventually turned to Rokov, then it wouldn't be Matame, because even though you have Bosser and Gid, even though you have Bosser and Atzamas, you don't have Gid. But with an adult, if you have with an adult or even an older or even a more fully developed baby, if you have Bosser and Gidim, if you have Bosser and Atzamas, necessarily you have Gidim as well. Okay. More on this topic. Now we said before that the Rokov has to be exclusively from the body and not from anything else, not from the clothes, not from the coffin, etc. So now we're going to talk about also the point that it's true mesim where the dust became intermingled. That wouldn't be considered Rokov either. So Omer of Shmuel ba'Aba, Omer of Yechanan, Shnei Mesim shekovran zeim zeh. If you bury two Mesim together, Nasu Gaugalin or Gilgilin or whatever Zelozeh, then one becomes Gaugalim for the other. The word Gaugal, Tosfos points out that the Gemara in Nida, which talks about this also, has a different gear, said Gangilan. Whatever the case. So there's a couple of explanations. Tosfos brings a couple of explanations. One is that it's a Moloshan Gaugal is in rolling. It's like the dust rolled in from someplace else. Another possibility is that it means something like bitul, that one is mevatel the other. Whatever the case, it means that one cancels out the other, since the whole concept of rokov applies only when you have the rokov of the actual mess itself. So now if you have two of them, what happens is each one of them cancels out the other, and therefore even if later on you have rokov from these bodies, then it's not going to be matan. The halacha l'moshe m'sinai about rokov is only when it's one mess exclusively by himself, not when you have dust of another mess mixed in with it. So now if you bury two people together, then they become Gaugalim or Gilgilin or however you pronounce it, Zelozeh, one to the other, meaning that each one is Mevatel the other and there's no rock over here. So the Gemara says, Mosir Rav Nosson. So Rav Nosson says, I have a contradiction. A braisa says Rokov abom shnei mesim tamei. A braisa says that if you have Rokov that comes from two dead people, then it's tamei. Implying even if it sounds like it means even if the two people were buried together. Omar Rava. So Rava says no, that's not what it means. It means shekovru zebifnei atzmei zebifnei atzmei. Means where each one was buried individually by himself. Vehir kivu later on, and each one was buried under the conditions that we said before, without clothing and in marble or stones or whatever. Vehir kivu, and then they rotted. V'omdu amaloi tavad rakov, and all you have is between the two of them. All you have is a tarvad. So in other words, the point is, so each one decayed down to the point where you only have half a tarvud from each one. So half a tarvud by itself wouldn't be enough to be metame. You need a full tarvud. But nevertheless, now the two of them combined together make up a tarvud, and therefore you have because as long as they decayed individually, then afterwards you mix them together, then it can still be metame.
What's a tarvud?
A tarvud is a type of large spoon. So yesterday we defined it in terms of handfuls. We had Chizkiyah's and Rabbi Yochanan's opinions. We had a machlokas tanoim on it. In the Mishnah we use the expression maloy tarvud rokov, a tarvud, which is a type of spoon full of rokov. So then we had a discussion how big is this tarvud. But that's the shear we're using, and we're meant to understand that depending on the different opinions that we talked about yesterday is going to be how much it actually is, whether it's half a handful, full handful, according to the Rambam's understanding, a double handful, etc.
In other cases of Truma and Tahara, we use Kazayis. We don't use Tarvud. Why?
Yes,
suddenly
here
we're changing.
Here, the concept of Rokov is a halacha l'moshe m'sinai, and that halacha l'moshe m'sinai says that here we need a larger amount, that we need a tarvud. So you just have a machlokas,
so
what the size of that tarvud is, but yeah.
So why does in generally speaking, in Tumah, if this is halacha l'moshe m'sinai, we don't use this unit rather than kazayis?
Because most
is
of the time, where we have the halacha
l'moshe
m'sinai, we have it. Where we don't, we don't. Actually, in the Mishnah, we had various other shiurim as well. For example, we also had in the Mishnah, for example, a quarter kav of bones, of fragments of bones, is enough to be metame a person, and a half a kav is enough to make a nazir have to shave.
That's not what I'm asking.
So each one has its own shiurim. It's all halacha l'moshe m'sinai.
No. What I'm asking is this. How many units are derived from halacha l'moshe m'sinai? Is it just a tarvud? Is it a tarvud as a kazayis? Is it more than that? And if so, why do we choose to use one rather than the other?
Well, why we choose is because that's how the halacha l'moshe m'sinai is, that one is a tarvud and one is a kazayis. That's how
it's
decided.
No, that's not what I'm saying. I'm saying if two units of Tuma come from Moshe m'sinai, how do we decide which one we should use?
No. So then I guess I'm not explaining it correctly. It's not that halacha l'moshe m'sinai says you should know there is the kazayis, there's a tarvud, there's a this or that, and it's left up to the chachamim to determine which is which. The actual halacha l'moshe m'sinai says you should know when it comes to rokov, the amount is a tarvud. When it comes to a fragment of bone, the size is the size of a grain of barley. When it comes to a collection of fragments of bones, the size is a quarter calf, etc. I'd say you have the size together with the actual type of thing that it applies to.
And where do we see that in the Torah?
We don't. Halacha l'moshe m'sinai, by definition, is something that was given baal peh by Hashem to Moshe and was not written down in the Torah. There's not a classic halacha l'moshe m'sinai. There's no remez for it even in the Torah.
So how do we know that?
Because we know, because Moshe Kibbol Torah m'sinai m'sarah the Yeshua. That's how. We did talk about, actually, there's an idea that it says in the Medrash that the body will be reconstituted by Tchias HaMesim, that we usually say, famously, that the body will be reconstituted from the Etzem Luz. There's a different explanation, there's a different medrash that says that it'll be reconstituted from a Maloy Tarvud Rokov. So that would be a reason why, that would be a reason for that shear, but it wouldn't explain the source of it. The source of it ultimately would be because Hashem said so. Anyway, getting back to the Gemara, the point is, in other words, Tosfos says that. The point is, why do we need to mention? So what are we saying over here? Again, we said he had two mesim. Each one was buried separately under the conditions that would produce rokov, that is metame. But now you have, when you go, and now you find only a half a tarvud, only half a spoonful, let's take the Rambam's definition that a tarvud is a double handful. So you found one handful of rakav from one from the other. Now, if you combine it together, then you have a full double handful, and that would be enough to be metame. So why do we have to mention that? Tosfos says, wouldn't it be the same thing if you have lots of rakav from each one? And the point is, even though all you have is one tavid between the two of them, and the Gemara is going to ask soon. Now the Gemara is going to ask soon whether rakav that comes from the heel is metame, because on the heel you have a thick callus of skin. Is that skin really considered a living part of you? Or you have calluses on the bottom of your feet. Is that really considered a living part? The Gemara is going to ask soon. So here, where you have only half a tavid of rakav from each one of these two mesim, very likely there's some rakav from the heel mixed in with it. Nevertheless, we're still saying that counts, because the question further on is going to be whether rakav of the heel alone counts. But if it's mixed in with the rest of the body, then yes, it definitely counts. So that's the point. Tosfos says that's the point of mentioning that rakav that comes from two separate mesim that was then mixed together is tamei. We're talking about where now from each one you have less than a tavid, and only the combination makes a full tavid. Okay, another din in this connection. Amar Rabbi Babachana, Amar Rabbi Yechanan, gozas sa'oroi. If a person cut the hair of the mess, ukvora imay, and then he buried that hair, that cut hair, together with the mess. Nasala gaugalin, then also it becomes gaugalin in the sense that that's that, just like we said before, for example, that if you bury two mason together, then you have gaugalin. Neither one is the rakav going to be metame because it's mixed with rakav from something else. The same way over here, even though it was his own hair, but since it was cut, then nevertheless, it still be when it decays, it still becomes gaugalin. And therefore, the result is going to be that you're not going to have rakav, that you're not going to have rakav from this mess. So now, boy chizka. And the Gemara says tnan hosam. So now let's see. We learn in a Mishnah in Masechta Olos, which talks about the dinim of tumas mess. Kol sheba mess tomei, anything of the mess, any part of the mess is metame. Chutz min hashinayim, with the exception of the teeth. Vaseir and the hair, vatsiporen and the nails. So in other words, if the teeth or hair or nails were detached from the mess, then they're not metame because the Gemara explains elsewhere. The reason is because those things regenerate. Most parts of the body, if they're removed, they don't regenerate. But the teeth, at least as a baby, do, and the hair and the nails do regenerate throughout a person's life. So therefore, they're not really considered part of the body. However, continues the Mishnah, over shas kiburan kulan tmein. But if they're attached to the body, then they're all metame. So if a person were to touch the hair or mess while it's attached, then he would be tame. But if that hair were to be cut from the mess and then a person touched it, he would not be tame. So now the question is, Bori Chizkia, Sa'ore Ha'omed L'Galeach, what about if the hair is long enough that it was going to be cut, Ritzipodin Ha'omed L'Gozes, or if the nails were long enough that they were going to be cut, Mai, what would be the din? So what would be the din? Would we consider that the fact is they're still attached to the mess, so therefore they're metame. So now if a person were to touch that long hair or long fingernails, he would become tame. Miyam minin kola omidli gozes ki gozus domi. Do we say that anything that's ready to be cut is considered like it's already cut, and therefore it wouldn't be metame, just like if a person touches the hair that was cut from a mess, and we're talking even if it was cut after the mess, after the person passed away, then that hair is not metame, because we said, so would the same thing apply over here, even though it still is attached to him because it was ready to be cut off? And therefore, we would say it's not metame. Or maybe not. Maybe the fact is it's still considered connected. The fact is it still is connected, and therefore it would still be metame.
How do we know that the hair that's been cut after a mess, someone passed, is not metame?
Well,
is
there a passage for that? The Mishnah mentions that point, and we said that the Gemara in Nida explains that the reason why. Actually, Tosfos mentions that Tosfos mentions a Gemara in Nida that discusses about certain other parts, for example, the skin of the mess, whether it's metamida raisa or derabanan. But even if we say that the skin is metamida raisa, the hair and the nails and the teeth wouldn't. Again, the reason being because all of those regenerate. All of those are parts of the body that regenerate, and therefore they're not the same as the rest of the body as far as being metamida. Unless, again, we're saying that if they're attached, then they're metame. If the hair is still attached to the mess, then a person touches it, he is tome. But if the hair is detached, then we're saying that not. So now Chizkiah's question is, what if the hair was long enough that they would have been cutting it? In fact, the Rosh points out they usually had. There was a standard length where once a person's hair was a certain length, then normally they would cut it. So now if it's longer than that, then the question becomes whether if a person touches that longer hair, which is still attached to the mess, do we consider it as though it was already cut or not? Tosfos brings another explanation that the question is, as far as Galgalin that we were just talking about, if we, would we say if a person was buried with long hair, would that long hair become Galgalin and therefore there would be no Rakov? But Tosfos says, Tosfos says that the first explanation is more logical because, after all, we're talking about in connection with the din of the Mishnah in Ohalos, where it's not yet talking about Rakav, it's just talking about what parts of a mess are metame and which are not. So therefore, it's more logical to understand it that way. So that's Chizkiah's question. So now the Gemara says, so why does Chizkiah even have the question? Why can't we answer it based on what Rabbi Baba Chana said? We just said that Rabbi Baba Chana said that if you cut the hair and buried them together with it, then it would become Galgalin. So we could be able to answer. Taima Mishim de Gozaz, we're only saying because it was cut, then it becomes Galgalin. And then it prevents Rakov from taking effect. Hole Gozaz Loi, implying that if it wasn't cut off, then the concept of Galgalin wouldn't apply. In other words, and the point is, in other words, it would be considered part of his body. The same way as, any part of the body obviously doesn't become Galgalin because it's all attached together. The same way, Rabbi Baba Chana seems to be saying very clearly, if you didn't cut the hair, it's still fully part of the body, and therefore no Galgalin, therefore it can become Rakav. Well, then it should be considered fully part of the body as far as touching it as well. And therefore the answer should be that yes, even though it's long enough to be cut, the fact is it wasn't cut, and therefore you touch it, you're going to become tummy. The answer is you could say no. You could say Hochi Kama, because you could say that Chizkiah's question is like this. Or you could say that Rabbi Baba Chana's statement is like this. Gozaz Hareza Galgalin. It's true that if it was cut, then it's Galgalin. Then there's no question about that. Loi Gozaz Mi Boi Lei. But if he didn't cut the hair, then you would have a question. He's not saying for certain that in that case it wouldn't be Galgalin. He's saying that you would actually be left with a question: is that hair that's still attached? Would that be metame or not? It's left as a suffix. And in fact, that's how it is. It is, in fact, left as a suffix. So if you have, for example, a mess has longer than normal hair, and you were to touch that longer than normal hair, then you'd be suffix tummy, based on Chizkiah's question. Okay. Another question and another discussion in this regard about Rakov. Boy Rav Yirmiya, Rakov abomina oke. What about Rakov that comes from the heel of a person? The point is that on the heel, you have a very thick layer of flesh, like a callus, where there's no chayus in it. There's an idea that's brought in Sifrei Kabbalah that says the heel is the malach hamavis in a person. You have the explanation that's brought in a number of places in Chassidus that the heel, therefore, is a symbol of Mesiras Nefesh, because even though it doesn't have any chayos, it still does what you tell it to. The person with his brain thinks, I need to put my heel in such and such a place, and the heel just does it. So therefore, it's a symbol of Kabbalah soil. Anyway, the point is that callus that a person might have on his heel is not really alive. So now what happens if you have Rakov from the heel? Would that apply? Would the din of Rakov apply to it like any other part of the body? Do we say rock of, do we say meet kigamunan rock of habomi kolemes? Do we say that maybe the halachal emotion is sinai about rock of applies only when it comes from any other part of from any other part of the mess, meaning the parts that have chayus? Avol de osi min okev loy, but maybe not the part that comes from the callus on the foot, which is not really alive. Odyom aloshna, or maybe there's no difference. Anything attached to the body would produce rokov, which would be metame. So there's an explanation. The Karen Oro explains the question really would be, and this is based on what Tosfos said earlier, that the question would be, if you have all of the rokov comes from the heel, if you have rokov from the rest of the body and some of it is from the heel as well, there's no question that it would be metame. Anyway, so that's the question. If you have it exclusively from the heel, so the Gemara says, Toshma, so we can try to bring a proof. We said before, we quoted before Braisa that says that Rokov that comes from two mason is Tome, and we explained that it meant that you have two mason who were buried individually, and each one you have less than a tarvod of Rokov, and only in combination do you have a tarvod. And we still said that rokov is metame, even though you only have one tarvod between the two of them. Now, if you're going to tell me that rokov that comes from the heel doesn't count towards the total, well, then zil hachadoma derech okiv kasi, v'hachadoma derech okiv kasi. Then after all, when you look at each individual mess, it's very possible, given way, in this case, in other words, most of the rokov is gone, all you have is less than a tarvot of each one. Had the body decayed in the regular way, you would have much more than a tarvot of each one. Like this, you only have a half a tarvot from each one. Maybe that whole half a tarvot comes only from the heel. And either one, zilhacha, if you go to one of them, maybe that half tarvot comes exclusively from the heel, and the other one, it also comes exclusively from the heel. Yet we're saying that it's tome. Not only that it's tome, we're saying that it's tome vadai, because the braisa didn't say anything about it being a tuma besophic or anything like that, implying that yes, even rokov that comes from the heel or from the callus on the heel would still be metame. But the Gemara says that's not really a proof, because you could say id irkuv kula mes v'ka'osi derech okiv, if you have that yes, the entire mess together rotted away and you have dust from the entire body, and now you have some of that and some of that dust came from the heel, hochinami, then yeah, of course tumor would apply to all of it. The question over here that Rabbi Yirmi is asking about, what happens if not the entire body rotted and became rokov, but only one limb? So let's say, for example, only the leg. Only the leg, for example, became rokov. And now you have the ka'osi derech okev, and now you have the rokov. Some of the rokov has come from the heel. What would be the din? Because now you have, if it was from the whole body, then yeah, the heel would be bottled to it. But over here, you have only the one limb was rotted. So now does the okev count towards it as well? And the Gemara says teku, so the question is left open, so we don't know. And in fact, there is Mephoshim talk about a case that's mentioned in the Yerushalmi that if the leg was cut off and buried together with the mess, then it's considered galgalim, like we said before. So then in that case, but when it's still attached to the body, then it's bottle. So again, the question in the Gemara over here would really be, if you can recognize that this rakov comes exclusively from the heel, so in other words, it's still located and it's in the original place where the body decayed, and now you're taking from the heel, then the question would be whether it's metame or not. And the Gemara is leaving the question open. The Rambam, when he brings these dinim about rakov, and he brings them actually in two places, he mentions them in Hilchos Nezirus because they're relevant to our Masechta, as well as in Hilchos Tumas Mes. He doesn't bring this whole poem about the heel, implying that in the end we say that even though the Gemara has left it as teku, in the end we just say any part of the body. We said before that even the hair or the nails, even though those eventually regenerate, they can still produce a rakov if they're attached to the body. So therefore, the same thing would be true of the okev as well. It would still produce a rakov as long as it's still attached to the body. Okay. Another question. Boy Rabbi Yirmiyah, uber bim e isha. Suppose that a woman was buried, a pregnant woman was buried with her baby still inside her womb. Have a gaugalim oloi. The question is now: is the baby considered gaugalim relative to the mother, and vice versa? So, in other words, we're going to say there's no rakov over here, even if you have all the conditions that we said before: no clothing, a marble coffin, etc., etc. The question would be: kiven de omamar uber yerech imay. On the one hand, we say in a number of places in Shas that a baby is considered to like a limb of his mother. Yerech literally means a thigh. So a baby is considered a thigh or a limb of the mother. Hilkach gufahu. So therefore, maybe the baby is considered part of her guf. Veloy have a gaugalim, so therefore it's not going to be considered. Therefore, it's not going to be considered gaugalim, and the concept of rakov will still apply. Which actually the Keren Oda also adds. Now, we said before that if you have a baby that's so underdeveloped that you don't even have visible gidim yet, then we brought before from Ola that there wouldn't be a rakov from it. Fine, but here we're talking about the baby is inside the mother's womb, so maybe that would be different. He'd be completely bottled to her, and the same way as you wouldn't say, for example, you know, even in a full human body, after all, you have body parts that don't contain boss of a gidim about somebody. The tongue, for example, has no bones in it, so there are other body parts similarly, and still, of course, all of them are bottled one to another, and you have rakov. So maybe over here, even though the baby doesn't have gidim yet, maybe it's bottle to the mother, and therefore there you would have rakov over here. Oidilma, or maybe not. Kiven de sofelotzis, under normal circumstances, eventually the baby would have left the mother's body, it would have been born. Mifresh parish mina, then therefore we should consider it something that's separated from her, so maybe it's not considered part of her body. And therefore, now if she was buried with the baby in her womb, then you would have gaugalin, because now you have two different bodies that were buried together. And continues Rabbi Yirmiyah, the imtim tzalaima uber de sofer lotzis mifresh parish mina. If you're going to answer that, yes, since the baby eventually is going to come out, then he's considered a separate entity, and therefore rakov wouldn't happen over here, which in fact is how the Rambam paskins it. Then you have another question, shichvas zera ben e isha mahu. What would happen if there was shichvas zera in her womb? So the Mefarish explains two possibilities. First of all, you could have just, you know, she was still of childbearing age when she passed away. So therefore, very likely not so long ago, she's had relations with her husband. Or you could have where we know that she had relations shortly before she passed away. Anyway, so what would be the din as far as that? Well, later on, now she's buried, eventually everything in her turns to rakov, including that. So would that be gaugalin or not? Mia minin kiven de la itzar, would we say that since that shichvas zera has not been formed into a baby, so therefore ki gufa domi, maybe it's considered like part of her body, because not something that under normal circumstances is going to come out. Or maybe not, since it's something that comes from elsewhere, because it comes from her husband, so therefore, or from whoever she had relations with, so therefore maybe it wouldn't be considered part of her body, and therefore it would become gaugal. And again, the question is left open. Boy Rapapa Pirsha Mahu. Rapapa has another question. What about a person passes away and they have waste inside their body, inside their intestines? Now, strictly speaking, of course, that that particular question would apply equally to men or women. But since we started with the case of a woman being pregnant or having shechva sera in her, so therefore the Gemara continues on, talking about a woman, even though this particular din would apply to a man as well. On the one hand, we would say kivin deloy mekayma b'deloy ochla, since a person can't continue to live without eating, chayusahu, so therefore it's considered part of her chayus, so therefore it should be considered part of her body, or maybe not. After all, it's something external. It's something that comes from the food that she ate, and eventually it's going to come out. So you have the same kind of question as far as whether it would become galgal. Continues the Gemara. Now the Gemara is going to soon ask if you're going to say this kind of thing, and you're very rarely going to have a case of rakab. So the Gemara will deal with that in a couple of lines. But first, what would be the din as far as oiroi? Now oiroi on the face of it means the skin. However, the Mefarish brings a first explanation that it means a kind of saliva. So like this, we've talked before about kichoi v'nioi, for example. We talked yesterday about saliva or phlegm or mucus or whatever that comes from a person. Here you have Rashi, the Mefarish over here explains one possibility. On the word oiroi, is it means the kind of saliva where you don't even need to put any effort into it. As soon as you start gargling in your mouth, it immediately comes out. So is that considered separate enough from the body that would now be considered a foreign substance buried together with the body, and therefore it would be galgalim? The second explanation the Mefarish says is that ola means exactly what it sounds like, his skin. Which in that case, on Omar Aleph, we talked about the possibility that maybe the skin of a person is metame only derabbanan. Maybe it's not actually metame deraisa. But even if we say that it is, the Rosh points out now on Omar Aleph, we had we talked about hair that was cut versus hair that was not cut. Here, obviously, the skin is still attached to the body, but still, the Gemara wants to try to answer the question. The Gemara doesn't want to answer the question, the question of one Amora with a statement of another Amora, because after all, they're allowed to argue with each other. You could talk about, for example, that the skin is not really a yad. Like this, you have the hair, at least can be considered a yad. You can grab a hold of the hair, and with that you can pick up something of the body or whatever, whereas the skin is not really like that. So still you could say that maybe even when it's attached, then maybe it prevents the concept of rokov from taking effect. What would be the din as far as his phlegm or his mucus? There's actually the words kichay v'niyo you have in many places in Shas, and you have different explanations that Rishonim give. Rashi understands that kichay means more like phlegm, like when you cough up or gargle up hard, then something comes out. Then that would be kichoy, and nioy then would be mucus from the nose. There are different other explanations. Among the Rishonim, but that's basically what it boils down to. We're talking about things like saliva or phlegm or mucus or whatever. So what about those? If a person was buried with those, would that be considered galgal? So now, with all of those questions about the waste inside the intestines, about the skin, about the phlegm, etc., so omelet of Shmuel ba'achal or a papa, how do you even have all these questions? If you're going to tell me that all of these things that we said before, each one might be considered galgalin, rock of the metame, how are you ever going to find a case of rock of that's metame? After all, it's one thing, fine, we can say before a mess can be buried without clothing, a mess can be buried in a marble coffin, etc., fine, but to have that a mess shouldn't have skin and shouldn't have phlegm or mucus and shouldn't have waste in his body, when are you ever going to find such a thing? So practically speaking, the whole concept of rock-up would never end up existing. And Rav Papa answers, fine, I'll tell you a way that you could. The Ashkiye Medikolim, suppose that before the person died, they gave him to drink Medikolim, which is a medicinal drink that they had in the times of the Gemara. The Gemara in the Mishnah in Shabbos mentions it, and the Gemara in Shabbos explains that it was water, it was mineral water or something from a certain spring. It's called Dikolim because it was a spring that grew between two particular palm trees, where there was the spring that was between these two particular palm trees had properties that it would clean a person out thoroughly. The Tosfos brings over here from the Gemara over there that one cup of it loosens a person's bowels. A person drinks two cups of it, it makes them, it gets everything out, it causes them to have diarrhea. And if they have a third cup, then it cleans them out so thoroughly that after that, if they eat or drink something, it'll come out of the body at the other end exactly the same way as it went in. In other words, it won't turn any other color or anything because the person has been cleaned out so thoroughly. So this Medikolim has the property of being able to clean out a person's intestines thoroughly. So therefore you could have that. So therefore they drank that, and therefore there's no waste inside them. The Sachya Nosha, then you could have where the person was smeared with Nosha, where we learned a few days ago about that. It's some kind of cream that causes the hair to fall out. Vashoka b'meitzveria, and the third thing was that the person was that the person's body was cooked or boiled in the hot springs of Tveria, which are hot enough to soften the skin, and then they actually take the skin off him. Tosfos actually learns that it would have to be the other way around. Even though the Gemara is mentioning the nosha before the removing the skin, it would really have to be the other way around, because otherwise you have the roots of the hair that are inside the skin. And therefore, if we were to say that those still count as galgalim, then you'd have to remove those as well. Tosfos also says, though, that all of this is only according to the question, only according to the svara that we said before, that hair, that if the hair is long enough to be cut, then we said, even though it's long enough, maybe it wouldn't be considered galgalim, but maybe not. Actually, maybe you could say that this whole question of the Gemara is all based on that discussion before about the hair, whether the hair, when it's long enough, is considered galgalim even before it's cut off. In fact, when the Rambam brings these halachas, he doesn't bring any of this, because the implication is the same way as we said before, that the hair, there can be a suffix on the hair when it's long enough. There can be a suffix whether it's metame, if a person touches that longer hair, whether it's metame or not. But there's no suffix that if the person died with that long hair and was buried with it, that it won't be considered galgalim. Well, by the same logic over here, we can say that the skin is still attached to the body, and the kicha b'niyah, fine, is not attached to the body, but it's still considered enough part of the body. It's still bottled to the body, and the same way the waist, that therefore you don't have to go through this whole thing of the major column, et cetera, in order to produce rakab, a normal mess, as long as you don't have clothing, and as long as you don't have a wooden coffin, is going to produce a rakab that is metallic. Now we mentioned, by the way, when we just said over here these things, that they gave him major column and smeared him with nosha and then cooked him in Mei Tveria, what does that do as far as the Kiche B'niyoy? So the Meforish learns that the Mei Tveria, the hot springs of Tveria, besides that it allows the skin to be stripped off, it also removes the Kiche B'niyoy. Tosfos rather says the Kiche B'niyoy would be removed by the Mei Dekolim. It not only cleans out the intestines, it also removes any phlegm or mucus or whatever that the person had. More dinim about Rokov, Amar Abaya, Naktinan, we have the Kabbalah from our Rabbeim, Mes Shetochnoi, if a mess was ground up. Now, when you grind up a mess, also you end up with a dust-like material. Nevertheless, Amar Rokov, the concept of Rokov doesn't apply to that. The concept of Rokov is only when the body decays and turns to dust naturally, not when it was ground up. But now we boil. Now the question becomes, tochnei v'chos of a hirkiv mahu. What happens if you ground up the body and then you left that ground up flesh where it is, and eventually it rotted and it turned into rochav. So would that have the din of rochav? And in fact, further on, the Gemara is going to talk about that if a mess is lacking something with the body, then also you don't have the concept of rochav, besides the criteria that we said before, that the mess has to be buried without clothing and in a marble coffin, and then without anything else with him. We're also going to have soon in the Gemara that you have to have the entire body was buried together. So here, actually, Rabbeinu Peretz asks that in that case, if you ground up the body, of course, it's lacking something. And the answer is because the fact is you do have all the Evarim over here, they're just ground up. So it's different than if one aver was actually missing. Anyway, so now the question would be, so if you did that, if you ground it up, and then later on it decayed, then would it be considered rochav? The question is, on the one hand, midi hutaima ela deikabos of the gidin batsomas, is the whole reason that you have rochav is normally because, as we learned on about Aleph, what Ola said, because you have boss of the gidin batsomas, vahaika. Well, in that case, you have all of those over here. You do have all of those, they're just ground up. Oidilma, mes kibu yosta be'inan, or maybe you need the mess to be in its original form, veleka, and you don't have that. So again, the Gemara leaves it as take. And here, unlike some of the other previous takers, the Rambam does paskin this taker was halacha. So therefore, when you have rochav from a mess like that, then you have a suffix where it was ground up and then rotted, then you have a suffix whether it's considered rochav as far as these halachas. Okay. Another din. Toni Ula Barchanina. Ula Barchanina Torah Braisa. Mes shechoser. If a mess is missing part of his body. Now, how much are we talking about missing? So there is a Gemara in Nida, which also discusses this whole matter of rochav, and it mentions over there, and this is brought lahalacha, that, for example, a person who was murdered is a person whose head was, doesn't have the din of rochav because some of his blood is missing. So that would mean that any amount that we're talking about of the mess that's missing prevents the din of rochav. There's a Yerushalmi that says that only if it's missing an eva shana shama tluya boy, only if it's a limb that life would have depended on. So whatever, you have different questions of just how much has to be missing. So he says ein lo rokov. So now the din of rokov would not apply to such a mess because you have to have the mess is whole. And there were two other dinim wouldn't apply to such a mess as well. Veloy tfusa. Another din that would not apply to a mess that's missing part of his body when he was buried would be the din of tfusa. We're going to have that. We're going to have tfusa and also the next one, shchunas kvaris. We're going to have them in more detail at the end of the masechta. Tfusa is that there are cases where you're allowed to move a body from one place to another. The body is buried in your property and you want to move it. And there are certain cases where you're allowed to. In general, what you have to do, we're going to learn over there on Daf Samach Dalad, is you have to also take a few etzbois thickness of earth from underneath the body and move it together with the body. Because normally that earth has in it liquids and secretions and whatever that came out of the mess and got mixed in with the dirt. The Gemara is going to learn it over there from a pasuk. But now this din of tfusa would not apply. Now we're saying only that would apply only if the mess was buried whole, not if he's lacking part of his body. And also v'loy shchunas kvaris, and also a din that we're going to talk about at the end of the sechta, where if you find mason buried in close proximity to one another, and you find three or more of them, then you have to consider that this is a shchunas kvaris. This is an actual old beis kvaris that was forgotten, and now you've rediscovered, and therefore you wouldn't be allowed to move the mason from there. If you find one or two, then you have legitimate reasons to move them. But if you find three or more, then already it's like they have a chazaka on that place, and you can't move them. So again, that concept, Ula Bachanina is saying that would apply only if the mess was buried whole, not if he's lacking some part of his body. Um, So in fact, again, you know, you have this whole discussion about how much of the mess needs to be missing when the Rambam brings these halachas. In fact, when it comes to Rakov, he mentions even the point, for example, that just it's missing blood, then already if there's no Rakov. On the other hand, by Tfusa and Shchunas Baris, he says only if an entire limb, only if an entire limb was missing. And then the Keren Oda discusses why that should be. Anyway, so Ula Bar Chanina is saying that. So the Gemara says Mesti. I have a contradiction though. A Mishnah in Adius says, now the Mishnah starts discussing over there the question about, we mentioned in our Mishnah on Memtesim Abeis, we mentioned Avim and Achai and Avim and Ames. You have a limb that was taken off a living person, which is Matame, and you have a limb that was taken off a dead person, which is Matame. Now, there are differences in dinim between them, and in particular, the question is, what if you have an Avim and Achai? What if you have, for example, a person had their leg amputated, afterwards a kezias of flesh was removed from that amputated leg, would that kezias be metame? Would that kezias be metame as well? And so the Mishnah tries to derive that from the concept of an avam and a mess. And the Mishnah says, loy, no, it's not a valid comparison. Ima mauta b'mes sheyesh lo roiv. Because after all, you can say there's one thing, it applies to a mess, which has chumrus compared to a living person, namely the concept of roiv that we learned in the Mishnah, that if you have the majority of the human frame, if you have bones that make up the majority of the human frame, two thigh bones and one leg bone, or one thigh bone and two leg bones, or the roiv that we talk about numerically, where you have 125 bones, and those are enough to be metamim to mas mess, the roiva, and the concept that a quarter cab of fragments of bones are enough to be metame, or you have the concept of a tarvad full of rokov that we're talking about over here. So all of those apply to a mess. How can you compare to a living person where none of those dinim apply to a living person? So the Gemara says, "Hey, Chidomi." So now let's consider the scenario. The Arkiv Chad Aver. Evidently, we have to be talking. How would there be Raka from a living person? You have to be talking about where one particular limb rotted and became Raka. The Kavasegam Mess, and the parallel case by a mess would be Afilu Chad Aver Ika Raka. It sounds like if there's even only one limb that rotted, then it'll become Raka. So what are you telling me? Ula Bar Chanina, that if any part of the body is missing, then you don't have Rokov. So the Gemara answer is no. Mi katoni hom mes. After all, does the Mishnah continue saying that? That on the other hand, when it comes to a mess, it would be like that. No, all the Mishnah is saying is that there is the concept of rokov by a dead person, which you don't have by a living person. So a hok mashmuan, you could say what the Mishnah means to tell us, shum mes yesh lo rokov. There are certain kinds of mesim who have a rokov, namely only if their body is whole. Shumchai ain't my rokov, but there is never the concept of rokov by a living person because it's only one aver. So maybe not. Maybe in other words, so the Mishnah may well be, the Mishnah is not necessarily saying that if one aver rots, then by a living person that wouldn't be rokov, but by a dead person would. No, all the Mishnah means to say is by a mess, there exists the concept of rokov at all, which you don't have you don't find it by a living person ever. But not necessarily is the Mishnah meaning to imply that when you have if only one aver of a mess became rotted, or if you have an aver is missing, that there shouldn't be rokov. Not necessarily. Okay, so we'll continue tomorrow, Baz Hashem, talking more about rokov, and then we'll continue with other kinds of tumas mess.
Yashikayach.
Yashikayach, everyone.